Production. Recorded live.
Hi, welcome to the second episode of Masonic Central, the podcast for Freemasons by Freemasons. This publication is a twice monthly broadcast that's recorded live with a panel of selected Masons from the internet community. Often its focus will be on Masonic world at large, and we'll strive to interview and bring to you topical information on the world of Freemasonry in the simple medium of an internet podcast. This week, our very special guest is Tim Bryce, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about who he is, some of his thoughts, and some of his past work for the Freemasonry community at large. And hopefully we'll have some guest speakers to ask some questions and see what we can turn up. How are you doing tonight, Tim?
Fine, fine. Hope everybody's doing well out there. Greetings from Palm Harbor, Florida.
Excellent, excellent. We are bi-coastal tonight, as we are most nights. Just a couple of things here to chime in with. I want to give our typical disclaimer that all content on here is representative of the contributors of us and does not represent the opinions of any regular or irregular Masonic body or Grand Masonic Lodge. My name is Greg Stewart. As some of you probably know from last week, I published a couple of internet websites, one of them being freemasoninformation.com. And my blog that I publish at as regularly as I can, which is at masonictraveler.blogspot.com. And my weekly co-host is Dean Kennedy. Dean?
Hi, it's Dean Kennedy here, and I'm hailing from Nova Scotia, Canada. And I publish on the Freemasons Corner at free-mason.blogspot.com. And as always, I'm here full of energy and ready to go. Take it away, Greg.
Excellent. And we have one of our special guest hosts, Squire Bentley, Fred Milliken. Fred, do you want to give a quick plug for your stuff?
Sure. Good evening, everybody, from Commonwealth of Massachusetts, now transplanted to the state of Texas. I have a blog, beehive135.blogspot.com. Vince Hall, Grand Lodge of Texas.
Excellent, excellent. And as many of you may remember, Fred was our guest last week, and we talked a little bit about Prince Hall, and we've got him on with us again to talk, and I think it's a great contribution to our show. Thanks for being here, Fred. Appreciate it. So, Mr. Bryce, we've had some relationship in the past in the sense of working together, and it's been a very good one, and I'm very appreciative of all the work that you've done, and all the work that you've done for Freemasonry in general. You're quite the contributor to it. I have to say I'm very impressed. I guess for our listening audience, it might be good. Who exactly is Tim Bryce? Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I've been fortunate to do a little traveling along the way, my brothers. I began as a Mason, just 11 years ago, and so I don't think that's very long. My father and grandfather were both Masons, and it goes back to Scotland, as far as I know. Interesting enough, though, my dad and grandfather never, ever exerted any pressure on me to become a Mason, and so I really didn't join it until I was in my 40s. And it was kind of interesting. I joined it at a time where I was not only had my company going, but I was very active with things like Little League. I was coaching a boys' baseball team, a girls' softball team. I was an umpire, board of directors for that, president of my homeowners association, secretary for a computer society over in Tampa, and so on. And that's when I became a Mason. I guess it was rather hectic at that time, and it just was kind of nice to me. The reason I joined it was for peace of mind, I think it was. Nice to sit amongst men where their word is their bond. And so I found that to be very comforting. And, like I said, my father never exerted any pressure on me on that, but he was really pleased when I finally decided to go in. So I joined it rather late, I think, and I wish I had joined it earlier, but my business had kept me from doing that kind of stuff. I've been I'm a management consultant. I do stuff in the information technology field, and I've been working in there since the 1970s. And so that's involved a lot of training, a lot of, globe-trotting, meeting with all kinds of people in all kinds of settings, and a lot of writing along the way. So when I finally got involved with the Masons, I found myself suddenly writing web pages for my lodge and then for my district and then for a bunch of things. And people started asking me to write on this and that, and it just kind of blossomed from there. So I started out at Dunedin Lodge number 192. I went there up to the Palm Harbor Lodge, which is Sutherland 174. I went through the chairs there, was master. Then came on back to Dunedin Lodge just a couple years ago, where I serve as secretary currently. I've also traveled in the district. I was in charge of publicity, public relations, that kind of stuff. Zone chairman, and then I also was editor of the Florida Mason, their publication, which was kind of interesting. It was originally a paper publication, and when I inherited it, the past editors said, Tim, I've got good news and bad news for you. You can have the job, but there's only $5,000 in the budget for it. Prior to that, there was $35,000 in the budget for it. And I said, well, you know, with $5,000, you can't do anything. So I convinced them into coming up with an e-publication, and so that we started, as opposed to doing one publication a year, we started to do it bi-monthly. So six publications, we can put much more content into it, and we were distributing that all over the place, and it worked out very well for them. But I did that for 2 years, and then we had a parting of the ways with the Grand Line, and just I started doing my own thing. And so I had my own publication. I also had my first podcast, too. I looked that up. I started my Masonic Update podcast back in 2001. And that was kind of interesting. I started doing that strictly at the district level here, and then that blossomed to Florida. And then it went worldwide. I kept getting people saying, well, can you talk more about this or that? You know, so that's how I found myself into it. And then with my run-ins with my own Grand Lodge, I just ended up writing a lot of my articles, which got picked up by people such as Greg, like such as yourself, and got published. So that 25 words or less is basically where I'm coming from.
You know, and actually, it's great that you mentioned it. That's where I found you, I think, is early in my my Masonic internet publishing career, was stumbling across Freemasonry for the Next Generation. I was very much impressed with it, the level of work and the energy that was put into it to publish them as frequently as they were. How long did you publish that? How many episodes or how many editions of that did you produce before all was said and done?
Well, after the Florida Mason, I think I went through about 2 years of doing Freemasonry for the Next Generation until the Grand Lodge or the Grand Master at that time gave me a cease and desist order, you know, and didn't like what I had to say about certain things. And it's a long story. I don't want to belabor that point on that. All I can tell you is I believe that the Grand Master was misled by the people who was handling him at the time. Mm-hmm. And you know, but the order's still in effect. I am not to publish anything in the state of Florida, and I haven't. I haven't published anything in Florida. I do a lot of writing, and a lot of people pick it up, but I have not published and all that. So all those web pages, everything I did, had to come on down. The publication went down. The Masonic Update podcast came on down, and I just did other things.
Wow. Well, you know, it's always good for syndication, huh? Take it outside.
Well, and you know, I really haven't charged anybody for any of my writings out there. And, you know, I've said, go ahead, pick it up. You want to pick it up, write it, go ahead. You know, but I said, now the opinions are my own. And I've been very strict about that. I don't allow anybody to publish it in Florida, which is kind of funny because people find out about it. Oh, you're Tim Bryce, huh? What are you doing here in Florida?
That's funny. That's actually kind of funny. I'm curious, do you know how far or how wide your stuff gets published? Do you find it in some strange places or, you know,
You know where it was? Yes, I find it all over the place. Where it's been really popular has been over in India, Australia, and the Philippines most recently. Philippines has been very much interested in it. They've got some interesting problems they're going through right now with their Grand Line. And they've been quoting a lot of my stuff, you know, in terms of how we're doing it. So I hear from people all over the world. A lot of people accuse me, and that was the point of my article this week. A lot of people accuse me of, you know, airing our laundry in public. And I go, I really don't try to go on out and really be negative about anything. If I've got, say, there's something wrong, I'm always going to try to come up with a suggestion for improving it. I just don't believe in tearing something down without at least having some recommendation for it.
Sure.
And some people say, well, you shouldn't do that. And they said, you should talk about the esoteric side of the fraternity and so on. And I said, look, you know, I really don't care about 100 years ago. I mean, we had a lot of things we did, we accomplished. That's great. I'm more interested in where we're going to be 100 years from now. They think I'm crazy for talking that way.
Yeah, I just seems to me to make a lot more relative sense to try to figure that out, because you know what's the business saying? Businesses that sit back on the laurels of their work from 100 years ago,
right,
are doomed to failure because they're not looking forward to the future.
Right.
But you know, and that's definitely a broader subject that we could probably come to later in this call, or even just you know at a different date. And really try to get to that, because that is actually a pretty interesting topic to kind of look at the status of things. But for now, let's just concentrate on this at hand. I'm curious. I know that I've read in some of your work. What bodies do you belong to? Do you belong to anything outside of the Craft Lodge, or do you stay?
Well, I've made the Craft Lodge the main body that I've been involved with, and I was involved with High 12. I did go to the Shrine, but. And I've got a little bit active in the Shrine, but I wasn't using it. And to me, the keystone of it all was the Blue Lodge, and so that's where I concentrate on things. No, I don't do Scottish Rite. No, I don't do York Rite. I'm not going to say pros and cons against either one of those bodies. You know, I'm sure they have their own organizations. But to me, the lifeblood of Freemasonry is at the Craft Lodge, which is why I've been so active down there supporting it. Because if the Craft Lodge fails, everything else fails.
Yeah, I agree. I know you and I have talked about that even just in some sidebar conversations, just in general, of, you know, the pipeline to all these other organizations starts at the bottom, and it doesn't seem like there's necessarily the, I don't want to say it doesn't seem like the support, but it just doesn't seem like there's the emphasis put on it. That's the point of origin for all this.
The one area I find interesting is our relationship with the Shrine. And I know a lot of Shriners get upset when I say this, but I don't see why they have to have the prerequisite of being a Mason to become a Shriner. And I know that upsets a lot of people, but I think they're going to be faced with economic decision in the next 5 to 10 years, and they're going to have a split with the Masons at some point. I just think it's going to be inevitable.
Yeah.
I think also that also brings up the idea as well that Greg and I talked about, that we might want to bring a Shriner into this show as well at some point, if we can rally in someone that's willing to talk to that point, that to discuss the future of the Shrine as well.
I can't tell you. I've had a few guys, young men, coming through, and they call me up and they say, Tim, you know, I'm going through my catechisms. I'm learning all my stuff right now. Do you know how I can get through this in like one day, you know? And I said, well, you know, we don't support the one day currently, you know, in our jurisdiction, but, you know, just stick with it and learn with it. He says, look, you don't understand. The only reason I'm doing this is just to get to the Shrine. As soon as I'm raised, I'm going to the Shrine. I'm not coming back. And I've seen this time and again, and these guys will pay their dues. That's about it. But they're not supporting Freemasonry. So I'm saying, who's kidding who in this regards?
Yeah, it's a unique dilemma. You know, I was actually flipping through a yearbook from the Almalika Shrine here in Los Angeles from 1977, and it was a great publication. It was full of brothers who you know contributed to the Shrine and were active participants in it, and you could tell that there was a great passion for it, and just the photographs and the full houses of people that were in it. And it really struck me that at a certain point, you know, maybe there was a shift in emphasis from a Blue Lodge position to the Shrine, of course, is going to be after the Shrine's best interest in as an organization. But it just seemed like the interest or the focus of the group as a whole was, you know, get through the Blue in York and or Scottish and then into the Shrine, because that's where everything was happening.
Look,
you know,
the reality,
I don't know if that's absolutely. Oh, go ahead.
The reality is we're shrinking. And as I said recently, you know, we've been averaging about 1,200. We've been losing 1,200 members for the last 6 years over here in my jurisdiction alone. We are now currently under 50,000 members, you know, and nobody wants to address this problem. Now, okay, those are guys are going down in the Craft Lodge. And again, at the Craft Lodge, that's the base of everything. That's got to affect the Scottish Rite. That's got to affect the York Rite. That's got to affect the Shrine. These guys have got to come to grips with that, and I don't see how the Shrine can support their organization under the current mode of recruitment.
Yeah. I know we touched a little bit about on that week, and I think you're right, Dean. It might be good at some point to get somebody from the Shrine just to at some point to talk about it. If You know, and I'll put this out as an open-end invitation. If anybody out there who'd like to come on at some point and talk about this subject, you're more than welcome to. Just shoot either Dean and I an email, and we'll work something out and put it into the schedule.
Now, the Imperial Shrine will tell you adamantly, look, they say the Freemasonry, we've got to support the Blue Lodge, we've got to do that. That's their official policy. They've got to say that. But the reality is going to be economics at some point.
Yeah. Well, you know, my biggest question, and something that I've kind of gone back to, is just with the degree of spending that they have out there on the hospitals alone, because they're privately funded. You know,
that's
as
right.
The membership base shrinks, I mean, where's the revenue going to come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
right.
And you know, is it my concern as a Blue Lodge Mason to worry about that, or is it, you know, a shrine concern? But still, I mean, as the two are intricately tied, I think it's still a viable question to ask.
Yep.
So, I'm curious. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Fred.
We touched about this a little bit last week, and it was my contention that the shrine was behind the push for one-day classes precisely so they could get a membership quickly.
Very true. Very
bring
true.
People through.
Thank you.
Hello?
Yep. No, we're still here.
I was just wondering what Tim thought about that.
I missed the part of that thing. My audio kicked out for just a second. Could you repeat?
No worries.
Yeah, we discussed this last week, and one of the things that I brought up that was my contention was that the shrine was influencing Blue Lodge for rapid initiation, one-day classes, in order that they can get their membership that they need. And what do you think?
Absolutely. I see that all over the place, too. I've seen it over here in Florida. Yes, they're very influential in that regard. They want that type of thing because they want to get those guys moved on over. Now, again, you have to remember, too, that you just can't automatically go to the shrine after a one-day class because you, over at least in Florida, you have to get your apron or wait 6 months.
Hmm. So at least there's a stipend to how long it takes to stick it into it.
Right. But that still cuts it way down. Cuts it way down.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, and I'm going to push the topic a little bit backwards in time, and it may just be a real sort of philosophical, let's hear what you think, but I'm curious what your thoughts are to the past of Freemasonry, and is a conversation about that, even in a speculative side, relevant to the modern day? Do you think there are lessons from the past that we can take and bring forward to the future?
Absolutely. I don't know if you read the book Empires, what is it, The Builders of Empires by Jessica Harlan Jacobs. It came out about a year ago. She is a University of Florida professor, wrote an excellent book which talked about how Freemasonry was tied to the British Empire, and she talked about, you know, the moderns and the ancients and how everything had to change as the British Empire changed. And out of sheer necessity, those Grand Lodges had to change to adapt to a changing world. For example, the whole idea of our token warrant, so that, you know, lodges, military lodges could hold a lodge out in the field and so on. That was all invented out of sheer necessity. You know, all these changes had to be introduced. And fascinating background type of stuff that she had in this book. So
that's interesting.
But Grand Lodges changing, and that's been always one of my big things, is we are not up to date. And that's my biggest criticism of the Grand Lodge. We are the most resistant to change.
What do you think that is? Do you think it's just a matter of policy or just the nature of the organization?
Well, several things. I think, number one, we're very steeped in tradition, which I understand, and so on. But that shouldn't have a bearing in terms of how we administratively, you know, take care of things. I keep saying to people, I hate to tell you this, but it's a business. You know, you should treat, you know, the Grand Lodge or your lodge as a business. And people hate hearing that, but that's the reality of things. Listen, when you don't have any members or you don't have any money, I got to tell you something, you're going out of business, pal.
Becomes a force of necessity.
Yeah.
You've got to do something. I'm curious, you know, in that book, in the Builders of Empire, how did those Grand Lodges adapt to it? Was it a matter of kicking and screaming into it, or was it an issue of seeing this issue of self-preservation, having to make these decisions quickly and acting on them?
Well, actually, as I recall, it was the Grand Lodge of Ireland was the one who was really pushing for it. And they were the ones who said, okay, we're going to help out you guys going out into battle and everything like that. So they were the impetus, and that created, you know, cause the Grand Lodge of England and Grand Lodge of Scotland to get off their duffs and start doing the same type of things. But interesting, after a while, those three Grand Lodges were working together administratively. And, you know, that's unheard of nowadays.
Interesting. So it really was something that they contributed into it together. They really decided at some point to talk to each other and figure out how to do it.
Well, they realized, look, you know, hey, we're sending our armies off to India. We're going over to Asia. We're going over down to Australia. We're in Canada. We're in the United States. We're going down to South Africa. British Empire was all over the place. And, you know, they had to say, these guys need a support network. These guys need to be able to meet. And so they came up with a whole bunch of stuff out there, the warrants, and like I said, the password, the pass grip, all that kind of stuff, the tokens. It was all invented as a result of that.
Interesting. You know, I wonder then if the time of that change, if it was something more because there was a greater call from it from the participation. You know what I mean? If there were more dissatisfied members or users who were looking for something like that. You know what I mean? More chatter from within about it. That was getting back up to the top.
Well, when you think about Freemasonry back in the 1700s and 1800s, it's a fabulous support network. I mean, keep in mind, you have the New World in North America, South America, Australia. That's all growing boomtown and so on. And a guy comes on in and he happens to run into another Mason in a new place. Well, they would have a support network set up. They would help the guy. They would genuinely take care of the guy. Maybe give him room and lodge. They would help find him work and so on. And that was the beauty of Freemasonry at that time. And you really don't see too much of that anymore, which I think is rather sad.
Yeah, you know, it's... And I wonder if that's just something endemic to it. You know, is that... That's an interesting question.
Look, and, you know, this is why I started my writings a couple of years ago. And you may recall that I was talking about... What is true Masonry about? Okay?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
True Masonry is not about Grand Lodges. I mean, can you be a Mason without a Grand Lodge? Well, you know, in theory, yes, you can. I mean, it's a way of life. That's a way of living and so on. And so when I was writing about true Masonry, I was talking about the true spirit of helping each other and the support network. Now, a lot of people don't believe that. They say, no, real true Masonry is about the Grand Lodge system and its bureaucracy and so on. And I disagree with that.
That seems strange to me, you know, and that lends itself to the question of how often do you hear back from these things where someone gets back to you with a counter opinion. I know I occasionally get an email and get an individual who wants to do a rebuttal against
your
some of what you're saying. No, off the main website, But I'm curious, Tim, how often with these sort of ideas do people come back at you and say, well, no, that's not the case. I think it's X, Y, Z.
Well, a lot. I'm in touch with people all the time, and a lot of young people especially come back, and they kind of like what I have to say. And I would say probably 99% of the input I get is positive. Now, I do get, you know, 1% every once in a while that's real negative, and they say, no, that's wrong. Again, you're all wet on that. And I said, well, you know, I'm not perfect. I don't have all the answers. If I had the answers, maybe I would be a grandmaster or something like that. But I currently don't have the time for it either. And that's something I want to make perfectly clear to everybody. I'm not a political animal. I have no dreams of taking over the fraternity or anything like that. But I'm a big believer of talking and developing a dialogue. And whether you like what I say or you don't, let's at least be man enough to talk about these things in a logical, rational manner, you know, put it on the table and let's talk about it. And what I find amazing is people say, no, well, you can't talk about that. You can't do that. When I wrote my article last year, I think it was, or maybe it was 2 years ago, on Prince Hall, oh, my God, it was like heresy.
Yeah.
I heard a lot of people on that. I had a lot of positive stuff on it, but then I would hear people say, well, you can't talk about that. And that also got me with hot water with people down here in the South, too.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, of all the articles that I've published, I cross-posted that one over onto my blog. And that one is, if I'm not mistaken, the one that's garnered the most amount of comment. I still get comments that float into it today. And this was posted well more than a year ago.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. And the interest level to it and just what people still think. It still seems to be a very much of a hot-button topic.
Well, you know, when I was writing that, I tried to think about how to how to write it in terms of what having an argument for, put up a defense for why we shouldn't recognize Prince Hall. And I went down all the rationales for what they said and so on. And you know what? I couldn't come up with a valid argument to shoot down Prince Hall. And I had to come on up and say, look, bottom line, this is about bigotry, plain and simple. I hate to say it, but that's what it was about. And no matter how you attack it logically, there is no logical argument against it. It's all emotional.
And you know what I think it comes back to, though, is that ability to affect that change. It requires the mechanism for all of us to connect in some way to talk about it. And I think that takes us right back in that loop to the fact that there is no mechanism in place that gets everybody together to discuss this. There's no sort of open forum or even as what you've written about in the past, a congress of sorts. Even just to talk, they're high-level talks. You know, a lot of folks talk about the Cominga, the Grand Master organization that meets. And then even just recently, the meeting that took place amongst the grandmasters, it seems like at a high level these things happen, but not at a lower level where you would think in a democratic system that these things would happen.
Well, I also had a thing going on over here. When we do legislation, as an example, when I came into Masonry, I thought, well, there's got to be a bunch of elders around here who kind of guide the craft, and they got to write the legislation and so on. And I found out there was no such people. Anybody could write a piece of legislation and then submit it to the Grand Lodge, and then you can go vote on it and so on. I was kind of blown away by that. And what we started doing is that when I was over in charge of my zone for publicity and public relations, I got all of the districts and the zones to come together, and we had a meeting on legislation. And we introduced 12 bits of legislation out of that. Well, somebody in the Grand Lodge found out about it, was very upset that we were talking about legislation. And I was ordered to cease and desist on that.
Really?
So here we have a forum where we want to talk about what's going on in our fraternity, which, by the way, I want to add, that was one of the most constructive meetings I've ever been to as a Mason. I have, excellent discussions that we had. But, again, the powers that be said, no, you can't talk about that.
Yeah, interesting. You know, it almost strikes me, and that's kind of something that I've thought about trying to organize here, are some sort of town halls and just something to get locally the community together to talk about these things. And if even not legislation, but even just sort of, some organization to activity. What are we doing? From the bottom all the way up, it seems like there's a lot of spinning that takes place without a lot of movement.
Well, we have a situation where we have the Grand Master has to come around and officially visit all of our districts. And that's fine. It says that in the digest that, yes, he has got to come and visit us and whatever. But these are more – what goes on at these meetings is there's a million and one introductions of people over there. We bestow upon him all kinds of gifts and honorary memberships and a variety of other tokens we give him like that. But there's no real talk at all about what's going on in our district. I mean, there's nothing in there about, hey, these are the problems or these are the solutions we've got out of our lodges. Nothing. Nobody talks about what's going on at the local level.
Right. The strategizing. It just seems to me that there'd be more strategizing to it. But, again, I don't want to dwell on that as necessarily a topic of this. It's certainly
But my point
one.
Is that the communications are very much suppressed under our Masonic system. And I think it's unnecessary. I think it's very unhealthy, and that's one of the reasons why we're stagnating.
Yep. The counterpoint to that, though, and something that I've kind of thought about recently is something that comes back to this, and I had a conversation in an interview that I actually gave on Friday that I'll publish soon, is that I think it still comes back to participation. I wonder how many people want to take the initiative to step out on the limb, if you will, and start to try to organize something like that. I think a lot of the mentality comes back to just what you said earlier, is that there are other people out there that do this, and so that there's a disconnect to realize that, in fact, there is no committee necessarily that's doing this, that it still falls to us to do.
Right.
As individuals.
Well, there's also, I think, a lot of guys have resigned themselves to the fact that, look, you can't fight City Hall. Plain and simple, you can't fight City Hall. Let it just go. I'm going to pay my dues, but don't expect to see me in Lodge. And
right.
That's the sad
right.
part.
Mm. Can I type in here?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Hi. I'm sorry. Hi. I'm Tom Acousti. I just logged in here. And I just had to speak to something that I heard come up. It was about the way that the system discourages. I'm getting the impression that a lot of people think that the system discourages activity and communication at the local level. Is it?
At the local level, yeah, I see that, but I also see it at the jurisdictional level as well.
And I think just to be clear, I don't think that's, you can't part and parcel that across the entire country. I think that's certainly town to town, lodge to lodge, and really it depends on the membership as to how much they're interested in getting involved and how much communication there is as to what to get involved in.
That's a good point, and I find it interesting when you run into guys who think that Freemasonry only goes on within the four walls of their lodge. And the idea of going to visit another lodge or going to visit another district is a totally foreign concept to me. To me, that's Freemasonry. I love to go visit another lodge, talk to people, go to visit another jurisdiction. I love that type of stuff. I mean, you meet people, you learn things. It's that, to me, is the most interesting part of the fraternity.
Well, and I have to agree. And, in fact, the reason that I wanted to jump in here is because I want to point out that it does really go both ways. There are And Connecticut is a small – I mean, we're one of the smallest states in the country, and I am amazed – we have 9 districts. I'm amazed that there are people that barely go to other lodges, let alone go to other districts within Connecticut. They may go to a lodge in the next town, but I'm finding that it's more often than not, most Masons do not go to another lodge unless they have maybe a specific reason to do so, a dinner – a table lodge, a special degree that's taking place that might have one or two of their own brothers.
Yeah, but I even know guys who won't even do it for those reasons.
Right, right.
I think is sad.
Right. So I have heard the complaint that Grand Lodges discourage a lot of communication, or they're not open with a lot of communication down at the lower levels, down at the district and the lodge level, but I see it really goes both ways. There are a lot of Masons that barely know what's going on in their own lodge, let alone what's going on in the lodges in the next town.
Absolutely.
Tom, I can tell you in at least my jurisdiction up in Nova Scotia, our grand offices, they really promote visiting, but I think it's more the individuals that maybe are comfortable in their own lodge and are almost intimidated to travel because they think that maybe they go to the other guy's front door and they might not let them in or something silly like that, which doesn't happen. Once you walk in and start talking, there are ways around that. And I think sometimes maybe that's the individual's own issues that they're dealing with. If they don't travel, that could be it, or just plain laziness, I don't know, but
or it could be that they don't know anybody there, and they're a lot of people,
right?
Only know maybe a dozen people in their own lodge, because I mean really, who shows up? I come from a very active lodge, and it's really the same 2 dozen people over and over that you see most of the time. So I can well imagine that somebody who only knows maybe a dozen people in their own lodge might be afraid to go to a different lodge because they're not going to know anybody.
By the way, the benchmark for a lodge is 10%. If you can get 10% of your membership to show up, that's typical. If you get anything above 10%, you're doing a good job.
Tim, that doesn't work in my lodge.
It doesn't?
No. American versus Canadian, well, at least where I am, my lodge is 50 members and 25 to 30 show up every meeting.
Oh, that's good. That's healthy. Mm. They're doing stuff. They're making it fun and interesting. Now, but going back to the point, how many times have you gone to a lodge, too, where you're greeted at there, they shake your hand, say, well, the coffee's over there in the corner, and then, you're avoided like the plague? I don't understand that concept. I always thought it was important when I was master. Every visitor comes in, he's greeted warmly. We have somebody talk to him. They take care of him during the thing. And it was just good old hospitality, and hospitality is good business. If you start turning people off, they're going to say, hey, you don't want to go visit that lodge. Those guys are a bunch of nutcases over there. They don't want to talk to you or do anything. But if you just have a nice little hospitality, by God, you've got people coming into your door all the time, especially down here in Florida, because then we get the same guys from Indiana, Wisconsin, Canada coming to visit us all the time during the winter months.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's really predicated on the health and the well-being of the lodge, and I think in the membership, that degree of openness. I mean, sure, there might be a bunch of curmudgeons in one, but, you know, certainly as things are going well, just as in life, as things are going well, people are doing well. So if there's a degree of health.
Now, the one thing I'll argue with you on that, I attribute it to management. Now, we do a great job of teaching guys catechism, ritual, all that kind of stuff. We don't teach them leadership and management properly.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're talking about here is how to hold a meeting, how to lead people, how to get people to work, you know, how to put the craft to work with proper instruction for their labor.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a story that I tell. Part of my job, I'm on our state education committee, and part of my job is to speak at the seminars that we hold. And I have a story, and it's a true story because I was there. I stopped at a lodge. It turned out they were having a degree. I didn't know that. They were just people that, you know, it was just a lodge. You know, because I personally, like Tim, I like to go out visiting. I like to go see what's happening at lodges in the next town or two towns over. And I ran into a guy out in the parking lot who just had that nervous look to him, so I asked if he was a member. He said, well, I'm not really sure. I think they're doing something tonight. I'm like, oh, so it's the new candidate. So I grabbed the guy, and I walk him in, and I met somebody who was walking out the door. And I said goodbye to the candidate. I hung outside. I don't know. Maybe I had a cigarette or something like that. So I was outside for about 10 minutes. I walked back inside, and the candidate was right exactly where I left him, right inside the door. Not one person had come over to see who he was. Not one person said, hey, I don't know who that guy is. Let me go check it out. Nothing. And I tell the story at the seminars, and when I'm done with the story, usually everybody is just embarrassed, and the room gets totally quiet because nobody knows what's made of something like that.
I know exactly where you're coming from. We had a guy from Ohio, a brother from Ohio, come visit us one time. Our lodge officers had a meeting that they were doing, and I'm secretary at the time, but they didn't need me for this one thing. So I'm going to do a cookout that day. I have the grill out there, and this new guy comes in from Ohio. I said, hey, come on in. Yeah, welcome. I shook his hand, said, hey, do you want a cigar? Sure. I'll smoke this later. No, you can smoke it now. Go ahead. Hey, listen, I'm cooking up some hot dog stuff. You want to come on out and talk with me, you know? Sure. I got him out there working with me, cooking up hot dogs and hamburgers. And smoking cigars, talking to me, and telling me, okay, where are you from? What's going on, you know, and what are you doing? When we got him into lodge, the master met him on the level. You know, we gave him a card. Afterwards, we invited him out for a drink at a nearby pub.
Yeah.
He thought it was great. You know, but the next day, he asked me for a petition to join our lodge.
Wow.
Wow. Right on. It's funny that you mentioned that. That's actually something that I have mentioned to our master for this year, to doing at our next meeting. A few of us at the end of our lodge meetings have started going to the bowling alley next door, into the little pub that they have in there, and just sharing a beer or two and shooting the breeze. And it's really done a lot in the way of fellowship between just us, the few guys. And so following months and months of heated debate and issues, I thought to myself, you know, what better way to try to get everybody else involved? Let's just invite whoever wants to come. And
that's right.
You know, I joke that no one will want to come, but the point being, and I think what we come back to within a lodge environment, in any group environment, is that it's the interest of having them involved, not necessarily their involvement. You know what I mean? Be interested in including us and let us have the option of coming to it. Is much stronger than, you know, being told to do something or having it as an absolute.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just my own two cents there. Something that you mentioned, and actually one of our listeners online, and one of their questions that they mentioned, and actually what was going to be my next point to you, my question to you, is Freemason or the New Web? Do you think that the two of them mix? How do you think the two go hand in hand?
Yes, I think they do, obviously, but I don't think... the Masons are taking full advantage of the Internet. There's so much that it can do out of it. But the one thing I found was interesting is Grand Lodge of Massachusetts last year, I don't know if you guys saw it or not, had some really nice commercials, professional commercials they put together featuring Ben Franklin, a guy playing Ben Franklin. And he said, ask a Mason, you know, what it's about. And so they put it on their web, and I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was professionally, first class done, excellent. And so I wrote about it. And I got all kinds of interesting emails regarding that. I had guys from the UK, Iowa, and also from Massachusetts says, oh, that's terrible. You know, you should not be soliciting the public. And I said, well, they weren't soliciting. They're putting their message out there, and they say, ask, you know. So they have to have the instruction. I said it was contemporary, it was professional. Young people picked up on it, and from last I heard, it did a great job for Massachusetts. But, you know, I found it interesting how people really did not like it. That really surprised me.
That's very interesting.
It's not the way that we used to do it. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And on that same vein, I guess when I think of this, I think of it from the internal aspect as to how it deals with the public and its membership. Do you think that we're doing enough in the way, and this is a very broad sweeping question, but enough in the way of trying to communicate the activities that we have going on?
No, we don't do enough of that. I always believe that we should have a press officer in Grand Lodge. The press officer should be able to put out announcements every once in a while through AP or all the various news outlets. They should have somebody professional be able to do that, put that out. Here's the other thing that bothers me. In Florida, as an example, if I want to put out an announcement, I got a big fundraiser or maybe a big dinner I want to go on out, I have no convenient way to let everybody in the state know about it on a timely manner. Now, unless I want to send in a handout from like 3 or 4 months in advance or something. But our communications at the local level is horrible. I should be able to find out, okay, what's going on over in Pompano Beach? What's going on up in Tallahassee? What's going on in Jacksonville? You know, so I can schedule things as well as get the word out to a lot of other people. But they don't do that.
Yeah. I know that's been one of my thoughts, is that there needs to be something, even from a state-to-state level, but something within your state that you can look up and find out what activities are going on, from speakers to degree nights and whatnot, for the individuals who are close or nearby or who want to travel over there to see something different.
Again, one of the things I set up during my day was the master calendar for the Grand Lodge of Florida, and what I did is I opened it up with certain passwords that everybody, all the lodges, can get in and post what's going on in their area. My God, they filled this thing up. But again, when the order came down from the Grand Lodge, I had to tear that down.
Wow.
So there was a communication vehicle that, you know, was taken apart.
Yeah. Was that something that was done through the Grand Lodge, or was that something that you would just
do privately? I did it on my own. I did it as part of, you know, the Florida Mason initially, and then when the Florida Mason went kaput, you know, I just kept going. You know, I paid for it out of my own pocket for that.
Wow.
Then I finally said, I'll take that down. Okay, that's it. You don't like it? Fine. Get somebody else.
A question here. Yes.
Go ahead.
A question here.
Go ahead.
Tim, you know, this keeps coming up about the Grand Lodge of Florida squashing things. And, you know, in the light of that and your situation with them and on the West Virginia situation, Ohio, you know, and we could go on and on with all these happenings, but what is the solution to curbing the excesses of Grand Lodges? I mean, what can be done that would be effective across the nation for all the GLs? What would you propose?
Well, are you saying just for the United States or for the world?
Well, I don't know if you can do it for the world. If you can, great. I mean, there's a lot of different traditions and cultures. But I know in the United States, you know, there's a lot of good Grand Lodges. But then there are some Grand Lodges that we all have to analyze it, that we all have to admit are not really that great. And then some of them are really repressive with their rules.
Right. Well, okay, I understand this. My feeling on this is I've thought long and hard upon it, and I do not have an alternative for the Grand Lodge system. And that's not saying the Grand Lodge system is perfect, but I think the Grand Lodge system needs to have put in like checks and balances, like a legislative branch and a judicial branch out there. And right now we've got basically a monarchy. Now, you got to remember, when the Grand Lodge system was created in the early 1700s, there was no such thing as really the democratic system like we understand it, the republic, you know. It wasn't until 1776 that, you know, we started to come up with Congress and three equal bodies out there. So I'm not surprised at all that the Grand Lodge system came up the way that it did. All it is, again, an extension of the monarchies from the early 1700s. But you know what, guys? It's the 21st century.
Yeah.
And the only way you can overcome these problems is, again, set up checks and balances. And think about it. You know, how we do legislation, I think, is a joke. We should have a body, a Congress of some sort, or call it Parliament, whatever you want, where you take the leaders out of the various districts and let them come together and meet a couple times during the year. Let them draft the legislation. Let the real leaders of this thing come forward and put this together. Nope, they don't like that idea. Let's have a judicial body, a separate judicial body that sits out there and interprets what we're doing and oversees what the Grand Lodge is doing. Maybe we wouldn't have had the problem in West Virginia if that was the case.
Right on.
Interesting.
So you said, like now all I'm saying is we need to reorganize the Grand Lodge. And, you know, that's not going to happen the way it's set up. There's too much power in the Grand Lodge now. They are not going to do that unless there's a huge call by the craft to say, hey, let's change this. We're fed up with how it's going. But I don't see that happening. I don't see the call coming from the craft on that.
I wonder, you know, all these things seem to dovetail back to each other. I wonder the degree to which that people think that they have the ability to do that. You know, the whole thing of other people taking care of it versus me taking care of it. You know, if it goes back to just being a cultural shift.
Well, a lot of people come on in and they say, well, I just want to get involved with the Masons and maybe I'll come on to a meeting and do something like that. But I don't want to put too much effort into that type of work. And okay, fine, you can't do that. But we do need people to become committed Masons and say, let's do what's necessary. I even believe we ought to have certification for being a Mason. That not only that you're a Master Mason after you get your third degree, but hey, how about every 2 years we have a refresher course as to what we're doing and possibly talk about the charities and projects going on in the craft? I mean, other professions, let's say accountants, lawyers, doctors, they have certification programs they have to renew every couple years. Why not the Masons?
Because then you would have to actually then you would have to define what Masonry is and what you would like people to be doing or to be working on.
Very good. In other words, we'd have to talk.
Right.
I think it's safe to say everybody who's listening or at least talking on this call right now is very interested in that happening. I think there's a lot of interested brothers out there who are willing to contribute to it in some sense of talking about it or contributing their ideas and not necessarily stonewalling it. You know, I'm curious what you see as the future of Freemasonry. We hit about it in just a little bit at the beginning of the call with some of the changes, but short of that in that analysis, what do you see in the next 20 to 50 years?
The shrinking is getting a bit much. I understand. I don't know if this is true or not. I understand. Grand Lodge of Queensland in Australia is down to like 3,000 members, and that has forced them to sell off their Grand Lodge facilities, their Grand Lodge buildings. You're going to see more of that, too, as we keep on shrinking. We cannot support all of these things, these Masonic homes, all the charities and everything that we want, unless we raise the dues, the per capita taxes, up to astronomical levels. Then you're really going to see people bail out. So what's going to happen?
Very interesting.
We're not going to change until it starts to really hurt. Now, understand this. I think it's the Grand Lodge of New York. I think it was 15 years ago, had somewhere in the neighborhood of 250,000 members. Last I heard, they were down to 65,000 members. When do you say ouch?
Tim, one question I'd have is, do you think that there's a natural size that we'll retract to where we can't get any smaller because you know, we have a certain population that's moving, a big bubble in Masonry that's moving through and falling off. That's one theory I've heard. What do you think about that?
I think so. I think you're also going to see baby boomers are going to come out of the woodwork, in my opinion, in the next 5 to 10 years as they're starting to reach retirement. I'm starting to see more and more of those type of guys come out. Interesting, though, I'm finding a lot of young men are coming in, guys in their 20s and 30s, are coming into the fraternity now, and they're really looking for what is Freemasonry about. They want that support network. They want to know the esoteric side of the fraternity. And if you keep on going in and saying to them, okay, guys, you got to go just memorize your catechism, that's it, I mean, we're missing out on an opportunity.
Yeah, I'm in that pile as well. I firmly believe that we have to be giving more value back And I'm fighting for that, you know. That's why I stick around, you know.
I was out at the state of Washington.
There's something to fight for.
State of Washington was doing something interesting around the Seattle area. They had a bunch of lodges where they had young guys coming in, and they wanted to change things. They wanted to bring in the esoteric. They wanted to talk more about what was going on. They wanted to have table lodges and have fun and interesting things. And the old guard said, no, we don't want to do that. So they got dispensation for their Grand Master a couple of years ago and started a whole new lodge. And they're doing just that. You know, they're having the dinners. They're having the table lodges.
Yeah.
They're having the interesting meetings. And what's happening to those old lodges? They're going kaput.
So, Tim, you would be in favor of traditional observance lodges being created?
Oh, absolutely.
It's almost a reorganization of what's already there locally, just taking the cream off the top and
well, what
and
I'm saying is there's a lot of the young guys want that kind of stuff, what I'm saying.
Yep.
I find it interesting. To me, a real healthy sign of a lodge is if they've got a good program of Masonic education going on. If you're not talking about Masonic education and only talking about paying the bills and reading the minutes, you're missing the boat.
Yep. Interesting. I'm curious your thoughts as to the research lodges or even the new Philates or the Masonic Society. Any thoughts as to that?
I think the Masonic Research Societies are always a very healthy thing to have. Unfortunately, they don't get the support that they really need. I'm a member of the Philately Society, and I've been following what's going on with the Masonic Society, although I don't know it in great detail, to be perfectly honest with you. Frankly, I see them trying to challenge the Philately Society. But any type of research is good. The papers and stuff that goes on over in the U.K., every year over in the U.K. and also up in Canada, they will have meetings and talk about just research as to what's going on Masonically. You don't see too much of that in the United States.
Mm-mm. When you say what's going on Masonically, you mean contemporarily? What's taking
place?
No.
Historically, contemporarily, and so on. They will have full workshops in doing that, and I believe the Prince Hall Lodges are also doing that type of stuff down here in the United States.
Interesting. Very interesting. I'm looking at my clock here, and I'm seeing us running out of time, and there's a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about. What have you got anything new cooking? What's new with
no,
New Brights?
I'm still working a lot on my own company in terms of consulting and stuff. I keep writing about management. And every time I bring up management and throw that into the Masonic pool and stuff, people say, you know, that doesn't belong in there. You shouldn't be talking about management in there. And I said, yes, we should be talking about management. That's what's killing us. We don't have managers in there. We got a lot of guys chasing titles, but, you know, we don't have enough people in there managing things properly.
Trying to manage it and grow it. You know, that's one of the things I think I've appreciated about the things that you've written is that they do have a definite definite taste to them of the sort of management consulting, you know, from the perspective of a manager and how to manage it better.
Look, I've been very fortunate to be able to travel the world. I've seen a lot of things. I don't need any more awards. I don't need any more titles and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of guys who haven't had that opportunity. And to them, the epitome of their social life or whatever is to become a master of a lodge. And they're not necessarily equipped to do that job properly. I can't tell you how many guys have gone in just to get the past master's apron. And after they got the past master's apron, you never see them again. You know, my feeling is give them the past master's apron, get them the heck out of the way.
Keep them moving.
Cool.
And then the other thing I would ask you is that you've got a new book that for those listening aren't aware of it, you know, probably should have mentioned it earlier, but The Free Thinking Freemason.
Right.
Published by Cornerstone Publishing?
Correct.
I'm curious how it's going.
I haven't talked to the publisher in a while, so I don't know exactly how it's going, but I'm getting some very good reviews, and it's funny. I went up to a lodge in another jurisdiction, and I walked in, you know, and I said, I'm Tim Bryce. I'm visiting here. And really, really, you wrote that book? And I go, what book? And I go, yeah, The Free Thinking Freemason. And I find it interesting, very flattering, too, that people will hit me up all of a sudden. I had a fine young brother from Greeley, Colorado, come on over here and visit with me over here. He happened to be over visiting a conference with his wife and his daughter. And he stole away one night, and we had dinner together, and he just wanted to talk about Freemasonry. All of these problems, everything we're talking about is universal, and
yep.
we all have our own little problems, our own little nuances in our own jurisdictions, but people want to talk about it. People, and that's
yep.
why I think shows like this are very, very important, so we can do this until somebody shuts us down.
Sales will come up north
not,
for that.
Knock wood that nothing like that happens. Certainly, our interests lie in just trying to make things better. I you know,
absolutely,
and, yeah. I think this is a good thing. This is the sort of thing that our community needs to do in the way of just trying to talk about this. You know, just let's bring these things to the forefront and put them on the table and look at it. What do we do with it? How do we make it better?
Well, the thing that bothers me about some of the internet discussion groups is it can get very vicious, and I just can't imagine that. Brothers turning on brothers and getting just plain out nasty out there. And I believe when we're sitting, you know, talking through these podcasts or internet discussion groups, you should talk as if you're in lodge, you know, and act
well,
as
no.
if you're in lodge. But I guess some lodges are nastier than others.
And no, you're right. And part of the reason for this blog, this podcast, is so that people talk, because we find that on the blogs themselves, people polarize themselves because they're not able to talk to the other person and they can't interpret what they're saying as easily or ask them the question. So they get polarized points of views, and it really tears us apart. So part of the object is to bring guys together here, the blog, or just general Masons of general knowledge, I mean general interest in Masonry, and have them be able to talk about things and come back on level, so to speak.
And as we discussed last week, even better, there's nothing better than sitting down and breaking bread with somebody else. It just, everything that's bothering you just sort of disappears.
How much time we got left, Greg?
About
how much do you want?
Well, the one thing I was going to mention is, and I don't know if you saw it, I wrote about it, the problem at the Grand Lodge of the Philippines. And let me just give you 2 seconds on that. What had happened way before their Grand Communications was going to happen, they decided to have a social event where not only the Grand Lodge of Philippines, but also some of the other Grand Lodges of Masons from the Philippines, you know, that don't recognize each other, said, let's have a social. Let's have a meeting out there. There's not going to be a tiled meeting at all, no aprons, none of that kind of stuff. Let's just have a meeting out there, and let's have a beer and split and break some bread or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great idea myself. You know, I'd be curious to see what the other people have to say and so on. But the Grand Master out there got wind of it and threatened anybody from the Grand Lodge of Philippines to attend would be thrown out of the fraternity.
Wow. You know, I wonder if that's almost like a professional, it's a concern of a professional sniping. If they're worried if these other organizations will woo their membership away, not giving their membership any credit. You know,
well, I think there's a little. I think there's some truth in that. But I find it interesting. You know, the Christians, the Jews, the Muslims, they will have religious meetings every once in a while, and they will talk about what's going on in their area, and their their churches, and so on. But you know, here we have Masons. The Masons don't even want to know what's going on with the other Masons, and,
no.
and that to me is very bothers me a lot.
Well, it's like,
Go ahead.
It's like the print hall recognition in Texas, where we're not allowed to not only cross-visit, but we're not allowed any Masonic discourse or any Masonic socializing between us. This is recognition?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Well, keep in mind, that's been about 2 years now since Grand Lodge of Texas decided to recognize Grand Lodge of, the Prince Hall Grand Lodge. But it doesn't sound like they're making progress, does it?
And still we have no discourse, no discourse.
Yeah, so what's the point of
still
it all?
We have that.
Yeah, no active way of participating. You know, and it just leads me back to wondering if people just don't see the value in the contribution of it, you know, just doing, just being a part of it.
Look, I'm not necessarily a believer of co-masonry, but I'd love to talk to some people about it. I'd like to know what their thoughts are on the subject. I would find that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we
would love to have someone on this podcast discuss that, actually.
I think sometime in the near future we may. and definitely we'll make an announcement to it as to when they're on to talk a little bit about it. What I find remarkable is that the breadth of lack of knowledge that people don't even realize that there are co-masons, that in fact there's a whole branch of it that exists in this country.
Yep.
You know, perhaps not hundreds of thousands of members, but that it does exist, and that in your very own town, there very well could be a lodge of them.
Yep.
So,
absolutely. Greg,
go ahead.
We should be looking at discussing a bit about what's going to happen next week at this point, and for our next show.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. We're just kind of getting there. Just the last questions, Tim. Anything that you want to mention or bring to us? I don't know if you want to plug anything or talk about anything that you're doing specifically.
Well, again, like I've always said, it's not important whether you agree with me or not. What's important is that a dialogue develop, and that we're able to talk about these things and think them through as men and Masons. And that's all I hope. That's what I hope to accomplish is just to get people to talk.
That's totally great. That's great. Thanks for being here, Tim.
Appreciate it.
This is a very good conversation. Very good. Stay on here, and I guess, Dean, go ahead. You were going to make a mention for next week's show?
Next week we try to do every 2 weeks. However, I'm heading out for a few weeks after that. So next week we'll have John Ratcliffe on, and if people want to tune in, I'll try to make it. I'll also currently have this show on. You can pick the RSS feed off of MasonicCentral.com, or I will also have it open listed for next week on TalkShoot, so that everyone can find it even easier. So we love to hear you come in. Make sure you follow us along on a weekly basis to check up on our speakers list. Again, next week we will have John Ratcliffe. Greg, did you want to mention perhaps what we'll be discussing with John next week?
Absolutely. For those that don't know, John Ratcliffe, he's one of our fellow bloggers on the interweb, and his website is at jratcliffescarab.blogspot.com. If you go to our website at Masonic Central, there in our calendar on the right-hand side, you'll find the listing for him on the date, which is next Sunday. We're moving it up a week because of vacations, like Dean said, so we're a little bit early. But the topic of conversation on that show, we're going to talk about the esoteric and non-esoteric aspects of Freemasonry. John said he's going to turn the tables on me and kind of query me a little bit as some of my ideas for it. I know I tend to be a little bit radical, but hey, what can I say?
They're going to even ask you questions, Greg?
That's what he said. He's going to turn the tables on me, which actually would be good. You know, let's interview the interviewee.
This should be interesting. I think everyone should tune into that to hear Greg Stewart getting questions.
Put me
and
in the hot seat for one.
This isn't someone calling you like a non-Mason questioning you. This is actually a Mason questioning you this time. I mean,
yep.
I've heard a few of your non-Masons questioning you, but this is actually a Mason questioning you.
Yep. And John and I don't want to say we've definitely locked horns, but we've definitely disagreed on certain topics about the fraternity, you know, from whether or not it's just a bunch of real well-organized morality plays to there actually being some, you know, sort of mystical aspect to it. I tend to be for the latter, he's for the former, and we'll definitely see where the two may cross. I think it'll be a good show. You know, if anybody's listening to this week's show, if you're interested next week, check us out next Sunday, June 22nd. It'll be 6, what is it? What time do we start this? 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, and we'll be here next Sunday. So anybody else have anything they want to bring to the table?
Before we proceed to close,
big thanks to Tim. Tim, I appreciate it. You know, it was definitely good to have the opportunity to talk to you and get to know you a little bit. You know, we've had this relationship for some time, and it's very good to get to know you better. I'm very glad.
And like it's always good to meet all these brothers. You know, I don't care where they're from. Just let's talk.
Absolutely, and special thanks to our contributing hosts, my good friend and brother Dean and brother Fred. Thanks for being here. And then it looks like we have quite a cadre of listeners this week. For all of you that are plugged in and listening with us, thanks for being here. And Tom, thanks for hopping in and throwing your question out there too.
Well, thanks for
it was great
thanks
having
for letting
you guys.
Me know when it was, and this was very enjoyable. Tim, you're always informative, and you're just as great to listen to as you are to read.
Well, thank you
very
much. Very
good.
So where can they get your book if they need it, Tim?
From the publisher.
Cornerstone Publishing?
Or Amazon. You can order from Amazon.
For all those who are listening and checking out our podcast, we'll put a link in our blog website for it, so that you could check it out and pick it up. It's a great book. I've read it many times here, and it's a great text to have on hand. This is a wisdom, true wisdom about Freemasonry. It's a great book.
Greg, are we going to try that call line again for the end? Do we want to try to synchronize that again like last week?
Shall we? Do you want to do it? Do you remember what it is?
I have it in front of me.
Excellent. All right, we'll just skip to the end of it, and let me pick up mid-paragraph here and say thanks for everybody for joining our show. Thanks for listening. Look for our scheduled announcements for the future broadcasts, and check out iTunes for these publications also, and MasonicCentral.com. That website is working now, right, Dean?
It is.
Dean. All right, MasonicCentral.com. If it's not working, go to MasonicCentral.blogspot.com. But either way, you'll get to us if you even just plug in a search for Masonic Central. And look for future and upcoming publications. And if you want to send us an email and tell us what you think, feel free to send it to MasonicCentral@gmail.com. Well, Dean or I or both of us will respond back to you quickly. Thanks a bunch. All right, you ready for it, Dean?
I'm working on it. Go ahead.
You ready?
Go for it.
All right. This is Brother Greg and
Brother Dean saying,
travel light.
Travel light. That's right. We're almost as synchronized as Olympic swimmers, aren't we? Those girls,
man,
in the pools. Okay. And
thanks everybody for listening.
Have a great night.
See ya.